And welcome to the program on this Monday. It is 1:06 in the afternoon and temperature is a calm 60 degrees out there. Maybe I shouldn't say calm. It is a little breezy with gusts of 23 miles an hour, but hey.
Did you say 60?
Huh?
You said 60 degrees.
80 degrees.
80, there we go.
It's 80.
I'm like,
60.
Wow, that cold front plowed through here
real quick. Look at that. And it's dry so far here in Fargo, unlike our friends or people down in Fergus Falls, where it's a little wet. Active severe thunderstorm warning over Dalton, Minnesota right now, just north of Ashby and Elbow Lake for another 8 minutes, so that will probably pitter out here and just be a general thunderstorm over the next few moments. Hey, if you want to be a part of our conversation today in the program, feel free to call us at any point in time. Yeah, between 1 and 2, preferably. 701-293-9000 is the Red Wing Shoe Line. You can also reach us via email. That's weatherorag@flagfamily.com and comment boxes there on Facebook, YouTube Live, and you can find us on Acres TV. Dean, Bridget, we all somehow made it through another weekend, and we're back here. How was your weekend, and how was your day so far?
It was hot. It was super hot.
It was hot and sticky. Yep. So I went outside on Sunday, as I do in the winter when it's 60 below wind chills. I have to go out and just see what it feels like.
You are a weather guy. This is what you do best.
Well, you didn't stay out in it?
Well, I stayed out for a little bit, but I kept felt like I was getting hotter and hotter, and I was like, yeah, we're done with this.
You would melt.
You're a lot of redhead. So the funny thing is about melting is I went out there and my skin was so cold from being in the AC and the dew point was at a point that we don't get to very often that it actually started condensating on my arms and my legs. So when I was outside, the water from the air was condensating on my arms.
All right.
It wasn't sweat.
I have a question for you weather guys.
Hit me with it.
Okay. So with all of the humidity this weekend.
Red and orange.
Right. I was asked because there was so much humidity, is that why we did not get a storm that popped off and all of that yesterday?
It wasn't hot enough.
Nope.
Okay. So that was the first question. You can explain that. And then the second one was we would have had, for folks that were further south of us who had heavy fog, they thought that they did not get storms because of the humidity and the fog. Anyone got a theory on that?
Are you talking about...
Partially.
Yeah, because we didn't reach our, they call it a convective temperature. Ooh, like all the ingredients were there.
Mm-hmm.
So like the batter was there.
I was baking a cake.
You were baking a cake and...
Batter?
Batter up.
Batter up, like a baseball batter?
Yeah, just...
Right. But
what kind
Bridget knows what I'm talking about.
I do. It was a little more chocolate or like a carrot cake, but as you were saying.
So you're mixing the batter. Everything's, but you don't reach your convective temperature. You didn't have your oven on hot enough.
Right.
So the cake didn't rise and we didn't get the thunderstorms to develop, rise up and develop.
I thought it was interesting, though, that we always rely on humidity as part of a storm
situation. It's a big
situation.
Part.
But then folks were concerned, well, maybe the humidity held us back from getting the storm or fog held us back. But I didn't think that was the case.
Well, the fog held us back from reaching our potential temperature during the afternoon. You're talking about the fog that ran into almost early afternoon
in
parts of Lakes Country.
Yes.
Especially, So that didn't burn off quick enough,
All right.
So partially right.
Okay. So this is normally this time of year we do have high heat, but we don't have as much humidity. Any particular reason why the humidity drove us up so much, gentlemen?
Sorry, I was having another way conversation here.
It's okay. It happens a lot.
I'm having some tech issues, so I'm trying to get it figured out.
Four people in studio, six conversations.
Yeah.
So, okay. What did I just ask him? That was fun to do to Dean. Okay. I had a question for you, and I looked at Dean, and I whispered, and I said, hey, what did I just ask him? And Dean, so far, has just spit up on our desk. You're going to want to wipe that up.
That's why we can't have nice things. Jeez, Dean, come on, man. Lock it up. It's only Monday.
Okay, because normally this time of year,
it up.
It is hot. Yes. We normally don't have this much humidity. What's causing our humidity right now?
So a lot of the humidity was just pulled so far out of the Gulf of Mexico that it reached all the way up into the northern plains. I mean, dew points up here, it gets humid. We hit 60s, we hit low 70s. It's not very often we have dew points that hit 80, which is Gulf of Mexico tropical moisture. It doesn't reach this far north that often, but it can if it's warm and humid enough to our south and there's open flow from the Gulf of Mexico through the central U.S., which is usually ahead of a very slow-moving storm system.
And there were heat advisories all the way from Texas all the way up to the Canadian border.
Do we get to do this today?
What?
As we come on the air this afternoon, 187 million Americans will experience temperatures of 90 degrees or hotter. Wow. Like, calm down
it's
there.
It's called summer.
It's summer. Like, I could get it if you want to do temperatures over 100 or heat indexes of 100 or higher. 90 degrees isn't even really that hot anymore.
But it's the Weather Channel.
It makes good press.
And it makes for good headlines. And it's good clickbait. If you see that article.
Yeah, but it's 185 million people will experience 90 degrees today. It's like, well, geez, I mean, it's August. Like, it's 90 all the time in August and July.
I was firmly expecting one of you to say corn sweat, but you did not, so I'm leaving that out of the equation.
There was plenty of that. There was plenty of that.
I'm going to Iowa from here. There's going to be plenty of that. Hey, Justin said I'm going to get stormed out.
Well, I was going to say
you could.
On your way down there, they could have a nice little derecho going from South Dakota through southern Minnesota and northern Iowa.
Rerouting.
Well, if you're leaving right after the show, you'll be
so
okay.
So here's what I would recommend is that if you actually just take I-94 west and then drop down in western South Dakota.
Somewhere around Pierre.
And then shoot back east into Iowa, you'll be on the backside and you can send us photos of all the damage that goes through.
You know what? I would do this just for you guys. I'll speak with my driver and see how that can go.
Yeah. It'll fly.
Mm-hmm. Right. Uh-huh. Right. Okay. What is the weather going to be, gentlemen?
For here or for where you're going?
All right. Let's clarify here.
So for here first, okay, but I can't wait for you to give me the surface of the sun hot forecast for Iowa this week.
Oh, man. Well, we've got some heavy rain right now going on, and that severe thunderstorm watch warning, I should say, about ready to expire in Otter Tail County. And by the way, if you have any flood reports or any damage reports from those storms around Fergus and Dalton area, shoot us a call, 701-293-9000. But those storms are right along a cool front, which is down to our south. There's also additional light showers out to our west that will be pushing into the valley here towards evening. We'll have a high today around low 80s with a north wind of 10 to 20.
Not bad.
A few showers still left over tonight. Lows near 60. And tomorrow, a few light showers possible through about lunchtime, possibly lasting into early afternoon. But a little cooler, low to mid 70s on Tuesday. We'll have southerly winds briefly warming us up into the 80s on Wednesday, and a chance for strong to severe storms Wednesday evening into Wednesday night, leading to breezy and cooler weather for Thursday. Maybe a few leftover showers, especially the first half of the day, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday for the extended Labor Day weekend, looking absolutely great with temperatures in the 70s.
Wow.
And quite a bit of sunshine.
I heard you say cooler on Thursday. I'll be back in time to watch the Bison play Thursday night.
That's right.
Yeah.
What time is that game?
Bison.
Beer 30-ish. I'm thinking somewhere around 7.
Yeah. I'll get on board with that.
I have a place to be at a certain time in an undisclosed location.
So how do you think they're going to do, Bridget? I've heard that some people are saying that old Colorado might dehorn the buffalo.
So here's the deal. As a great Bison fan, I am not too proud to say that, our football team isn't what we were 4 years ago.
Yeah, the dynasty might have just collapsed the other.
I look at it as everything is cyclical.
And newer coach, though?
You can call it as coaching. You can call it whatever you want. I think a new coach is a refreshing change.
I
do appreciate that.
I think the other schools are just catching up with talent.
And a lot of them are. And NIL has changed so much. Wait, why is this suddenly a sports show? But NIL has caught up a lot.
We need a break from that.
In how folks are recruited and they change schools. And so much is different than what it was just 4 or 5 years ago.
Now, could you do me one favor?
Nebraska might win next year.
No, if you have any connections, okay?
Because yeah. Me connections?
Can you guys get out there?
Can you guys beat up on Colorado? Because Ronnie and I are going down Colorado versus Nebraska the following week.
I'll do what I can.
See if you. I know you've got connections.
I actually have a high school classmate whose son is an assistant coach at Colorado. So I'll see what I can do for you.
I was just saying that. Really weird.
Throw him a little money.
We'll see.
Little payment on the side there.
Last week I needed a telehandler and I was willing to negotiate for a chocolate cake, so I can't see anything wrong in my type of bartering system.
Perfect.
What's going on, Al?
Well, when she goes to Iowa, there's a lot of construction in between here and the cities, so she's going to have to put a blindfold on so she doesn't see them westbound sharing the eastbound lane.
Yeah. I'm thinking I might have to take a little reroute. Let's say I take I-29 south and then I-90 to 35.
That's 150 miles farther.
Wow, he died.
Not at
that
the speed I go, Al. All right, we'll check it out.
Or I do hear that there's an airport here and an airport where you're going.
Yeah, you know, come on, just fly.
Can you with you? Apparently, you've never seen me drive. I'll be fine.
Yeah, she'll get there quicker.
You might just take off.
Those running boards double his
wings. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks for calling, Al. Appreciate it. Oh man, yeah, just fly. Actually, instead of that, we just got a new helicopter intern, and I'm sure you could take the helicopter down there.
I will give
the intern needs hours for those school credits.
So we've now gotten a student from UND School of Aviation to see, or aerospace, to see if we could possibly do one more type of
internship. The great thing about it is that the intern gets school credit and flight hours while the engines are running.
People are going to start to wonder how big our imaginations are. And frankly, the answer is real big around here.
Yes, it is.
Or the BS meter, one or the other.
One or the other.
Shut your mouth. You shut that.
Welcome to Monday. Oh, goodness.
Hey. Anyways, fun things on the show today.
Yes, there are. Mm-hmm. You want to run them down?
I sure do. A few of the topics we're going to run down today is we'll hit on the Farm Progress Show down there in Iowa. That's the whole reason why Bridget's taking the company helicopter down there to Boom, is it? Boom, Iowa?
Boone.
It'll always be Boom in my mind.
I'm glad it will.
It's always going to be Boom, Iowa. As well as what would a recession do to agriculture? I know that's been a lot of talk, and whether it is or not, you know, let's just see what the possible impacts could be. And also, an Upside Meats files a suit in Florida. But before we get to all those topics, our guest is going to be in studio today. We're going to be talking about wheat and sunflower markets. Dr. Frayne Olson with NDSU Ag Econ is here. So if you have any questions for Dr. Frayne Olson about the wheat and sunflower markets, or really probably anything else, feel free to shoot us a call like Al did just a few moments ago. Call us on the Red Wing Shoe Line. That's 701-293-9000. Email weather or ag at flagfamily.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. We greatly appreciate it. And also, our corn is still maturing right along out there in the field. Here we grow 2024, where we're custom farming 20 acres of corn north of Glendon, Minnesota. Once we're done, all of our profits will be going to Farm Rescue. Who's looking for extra volunteers, especially if you have a CDL? They need your help getting equipment pushed into place. And Dairyland Seed, thank you for providing our corn variety this year. Very, very happy to have a quality seed out in the field, and it's been going along great for us. Ellingson Drainage is also one of our partners to make sure that we didn't have an excessive amount of surface water, and water has been very important to the corn. Keep following along with all of our videos on Facebook, YouTube, under Here We Grow. And for questions that you have today, you can reach out to us again on the Red Wing Shoe Line, 701-293-9000. We have a guest with us at special request from listeners. Had some questions earlier on this summer in regards to the wheat market, sunflower market specifically. Those are two crops that North Dakota has built its ag economy on, but we see a lot less acres of them, and I was asked why. Part of that has to do with price. Well, why did the price fall? So, Dr. Frayne Olson of NDSU Ag Economics, I'm going to guess this is not an unusual question for you to have to answer.
No, it's not the first time somebody's asked that. Oh, gotta get.
Yep, pull that mic right up to you.
Oh, there we go.
There you go.
Get her set up.
Okay, so how do you start that answer for folks?
First, we need to separate wheat and sunflower. They're different crops, different uses, different supply-demand conditions. Start with wheat first. The wheat market is very complex. There's a lot of moving parts because it is really a global marketplace. So whenever we talk about wheat, you can't just look at what's happening in the United States. You have to look at what's happening globally. So first, in the U.S., we've had a really good winter wheat harvest.
Mm-hmm.
So primarily the Kansas-Oklahoma crop was very good this year. Quality's coming in very typical, normal. Through early reports coming from North Dakota, we're going to have a fantastic crop here as well.
Bushels, but not necessarily proteins,
that
correct?
That is true. Bushels, okay. Bushels, not necessarily quality. So
okay.
The quality, we're going to have a lot of variation in the quality this year. But we are looking at bushels for right now. And then look to our neighbors to the north. Canada also produce a lot of spring wheat. They're going to have a very good crop, very similar to what we have here in North Dakota, Montana region. Maybe not the quality variation. We'll have to wait to see. They're just in the middle of harvest. Looking globally, the largest exporter of wheat is Russia. And when we look at what's happening in Russia and all the changes that are going on there, the Russians have been very aggressive in their export pace. When the Russia invaded Ukraine, the U.S. as well as Europe and a lot of other countries put on economic sanctions to try and punish Russia in particular for their actions. But they exempted agricultural products, including wheat, corn, sunflowers, fertilizer, because of humanitarian reasons. And so Russia, as a way to be able to support their economy as well as be able to maintain the value of the ruble, their currency, has been exporting wheat at very aggressively. Also, when the European and U.S. companies pulled out of Russia with the Cargills, the ADMs, the Bungies, Louis Dreyfus, the big global traders, the Russian government came in and basically took over those facilities. And so right now, the Russian system is very centrally controlled and centrally influenced. So there's a lot of price controls that are going on within their country, as well as the facilities that are used to actually export the product is controlled by the Russian government. So that's also one of the reasons. Globally, we have a lot of supply. There's plenty of wheat around. But because of that, essentially very aggressive pricing policies coming out of the Black Sea, in particular Russia, that's causing some problems globally.
Now, Frayn, if we were to put sanctions on them, and you said the reason they didn't was mm-hmm. for humanitarian purposes, could the United States make up what they are exporting out?
Maybe.
That's fair.
Okay. So of all the wheat we produce, about half of it we keep within the U.S.
Right.
for our own domestic use, our domestic milling industry, and about the other half is exported. But given the size of not only Russian production, but more importantly, the Russian export pace, I don't know that we could. There's just such huge volumes coming out of that region. Now, the other thing I want to comment, just to make very clear, the countries that we usually export wheat to typically do not buy a lot of wheat from Russia, and vice versa. The countries that are buying from Russia typically don't buy a lot of wheat from the U.S. So this is one of those weird things going on in the markets where globally, you look at all the supply, all the demand, you say, boy, there's a lot of wheat around. But not every country trades with every other country. So the humanitarian part of it is Russia supplies a lot of wheat into North Africa, into the Middle East, some into India. So those countries that aren't as wealthy, that don't have the income capacity to buy and import a lot from the United States, have gone to Russia because it's a much cheaper product.
Could a change in election alter that?
In the U.S., do you mean, Dean?
Yeah.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Because a lot of the sanctions, again, that we put on came from not only the administrative arm, the president's, but also from Congress.
Okay.
And most of the sanctions that were put on were bipartisan. Everybody agreed that, no, we need to do this.
Right.
So it's not really a political Republican versus Democrat kind of fight going on.
Okay.
Why is the price different between Russian and American wheat? I guess what I'm getting is, why won't everyone just buy from Russia then if it's cheaper versus buying with the United States?
Okay, so there's two things that we have to remember. Number one is quality.
Mm-hmm.
And in the global wheat market, what we would classify as kind of a hard red winter wheat, kind of that 11.5% or 12% protein winter wheat, is mm-hmm. this is the standard, kind of the base. And that's a lot of what Russia exports, is that medium quality protein bread wheat. In the United States, we have six different classes. We have the spring wheats, which are the higher protein. We use those kind of for products like frozen dough, or for pizza crust, or for bagels. You need a lot of really strong dough strength. You need some higher protein content. And then we have products like the soft red winter wheat or the soft white wheat that has very low protein that works really, really well for cakes and cookies and crackers. So we export a wider variety of wheats, a wider range of wheats. And the buyers, the countries that we sell to, are very quality sensitive. They're very picky about what kind mm-hmm. they want.
Mm-hmm.
So part of it is the quality attributes and what they're able to ship versus what we can ship. The other part is obviously shipping costs, just transportation and logistics. It's a mm-hmm. lot easier for us to get spring wheat from, let's say, North Dakota into the PNW, the Pacific Northwest export facilities, onto Japan and Korea and the Philippines, which are really big spring wheat buyers, versus going from the Black Sea either through the Suez Canal and the Indian Ocean and all the way back around, or even worse, going around South Africa.
Right.
And so the distance for travel, the transportation costs, as well as the quality make a difference.
Okay. With the market today, the wheat market being down as low as it is, mm-hmm. does this match or show similarities to other points in time? Have we been here before where the market's been crap?
Yes.
In a nutshell.
In a nutshell, yes. Yeah. We have been here before. The last time period, kind of that last range of prices was between about, from about the late 2015 into about 2019. There was a range of time, there's about 4 years-ish, where we had both corn prices, wheat prices, soybean prices, very similar to what we see today. And then we had a big spike. Part of that was because of some production issues. There was obviously some global issues going on. We had COVID in the middle. There's a bunch of things that happened kind of at the same time that raised commodity prices very, very high. And we've been at those higher levels for several years. We're just now, because of a combination of production, kind of a slowing global economy, mm-hmm. you know, we've got plenty around. The buyers aren't worried about finding supplies, whether it be from the United States or from other countries. And prices have softened. And so, yes, we've been at these levels before. The question I'm getting from most farmers is, so how long will this last? And, of course, my crystal ball isn't any better than anybody else's.
You got a magic eight ball.
Okay.
that thing's got a pretty good track record.
I might have to borrow that.
It does for weather.
It's been very well.
Oh, Frank, goodness. What can we do to get the prices back up?
How much bread can you eat?
Yeah, right.
or how many fields can you sabotage?
Yeah. I mean, is there anything that either our government can do or the farmers can do to...
Or even just the market in general? I don't know if that's
a thing. So usually, I mean, again, coming back to Econ 101, I got to play the professor and play the teacher.
No, that's all right.
What do you mean play? That's what you do.
Okay, all right. So you got two pieces, the supply side and you got the demand side.
Right.
The demand side tends to be much more stable, even though prices rise and fall. You know, we do see some variability in exports, who we sell to and how much we sell in the global markets, you know, based on kind of demand and prices. But a lot of the change that we see is really on the supply side. And to be realistic, I mean, I have to be honest and try and give you the message with the bark on. Realistically, it'll likely take a supply problem someplace in the world for prices to start to rebound. We have to have some more scarcity. People have to be concerned. As a buyer right now, I'm not worried about laying awake nights worrying about where am I going to get my product from. So,
or bigger weather events, maybe down in South America. Yeah. Or
And that's the big change that we've seen over the last probably 15 years is that we really are now integrated into the global marketplace. So the weather in Brazil, the weather in Russia, the weather in Europe has as much impact on what goes on here in our prices as what goes on in the weather in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely does.
Do you think that the war in Ukraine with Russia, if that were to somehow get resolved, and Ukraine, I've heard that Ukraine is a big producer, mm-hmm. would that hurt the global market more if that conflict were to subside and they were to go back to farming at 100% after a year or two from when it ended?
So when you look at Ukraine, that is a very, very productive area. That part of the world has incredibly good soils. They've got very moderate weather. They raise a wide range of products and crops, not just wheat and corn and soybeans, but a lot of vegetable crops, a lot of fruits. Mm-hmm. Very, very diversified area. And over the last several years, Ukraine has been working very hard to build stronger economic connections into Europe. And so for them, the easiest and biggest marketplace that's in their backyard is mm-hmm. moving into the European market.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They have been producing a lot of, again, the bulk commodities, the grains like corn and soybeans. Well, not so much soybeans, but corn, wheat, sunflower. We haven't talked about sunflowers yet. I'll try and get to that. And again, they have been competing kind of head-to-head with the Russians for those easy markets to get to, the North African market, the Middle Eastern market, et cetera.
I see.
So it would make a difference. They have the capacity to really produce and produce a lot of product. But I do think a lot of that would flow primarily into the European markets and not be as a direct competition to the U.S.
I see. Any last questions here on wheat before we head over to news?
We got to do news, and then we'll come back to sunflowers. How's that
going? Yeah, that sounds great. And if you got any questions for Dr. Fran Olson with NDSU Ag Econ, we're talking about wheat and sunflower markets and really kind of anywhere else it goes. Feel free to give us a call, 701-293-9000. Again, the Red Wing Shoe phone line here to the studio is 701-293-9000. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
All right, welcome back. Want to run over a new severe thunderstorm warning that was issued until 2:15. There was a severe thunderstorm located right around the Ashby area, or about 15 miles southeast of Fergus, moving east at about 20 miles an hour. 60 plus mile an hour wind gusts, quarter size hail are possible with this. Again, Battle Lake, Ashby, Dalton, Urbank, you're all in the path of this. If you're on 94 in Minnesota, it's between mile markers 71 and 75. So once again, a severe thunderstorm warning until 2:15 for south central Ottertail and northeastern Grant County. That's on the Minnesota side. And once again, that's until 2:15. Main threat with this looks to be possible damaging winds, but the torrential rainfall with this. And again, the possibility of up to quarter size hail, all of that moving eastward at about 20. So moving away from the, at least from the valley, but luckily no reports of any damage as of yet. So that's good news for the crops
well,
out there.
Well, absolutely.
Too,
and I feel underinsured to drive over there, so I'm going to try to avoid it.
Right.
Fortuitous that one of our sponsors today is the Great Harvest Bread Company. And they are right here in Fargo. They have a cafe, so you can go check out your favorite breakfast sandwiches, stop in for lunch. Their bread is made fresh every single day. And as we learned last week when samples came in to us in the studio, they grind their own flours. So check them out. But like I said, it's very fortuitous to have that ad today in the fact that we have with us Dr. Fran Olson from North Dakota State University's Ag Economics Program. And we are talking about those markets when it comes to wheat and specifically sunflowers, because we had a listener question about why are those markets down so far. So let's go to sunflowers. And, you know, sunflower acres in North Dakota have fallen for a number of reasons. Commodity pricing is one. We had some changes in chemistry when it came to especially banded sunflower moth in western South Dakota that affected some of our acres down there as well. But in the overall marketplace, I think it plays back into a little bit to do with Ukraine globally, as we were talking about with wheat. So where am I at in those points? Am I spot on? Am I missing something, Fran? What do we need to get to?
No, you're on the right track.
Good, right track.
I mean, you know, as a farmer, you're looking at what crops can you grow, what kind of soil types you have, what kind of weather conditions, and what's the relative profitability. So there are some areas that are of the region of the state that are very well suited for sunflower production, works very well in rotation. We're always going to have some of those acres. But again, you know, does the marketplace have to try and encourage more production of that crop or less production? And so they're always competing for acres, especially in the spring's work. For sunflower specifically, you know, there is the global oilseed market, vegetable oil market. And both Ukraine and Russia export not only whole sunflower, but also sunflower oil. Now, again, in the United States, most of our sunflowers stay domestic. We do have a small export market for whole sunflower. We do have a small export market for sunflower oil. But the vast majority of what we produce here is really for domestic consumption. Two big uses. One, obviously, crushing into oil. Sunflower oil, you know, competitor for canola oil. It actually works very, very well for frying in particular because it has a very high flash point. If you've ever made fried turkey at Thanksgiving,
deep fry them.
You need that oil as hot as possible to get that nice crispy outside. Well, sunflower oil is one of those that has a very high boiling point. But the challenge we've had over the last couple of years in particular, first, we've had some pretty good yields on sunflowers. Most of the sunflower guys that I've talked to have had pretty good production, okay? The other use for that as a secondary market is actually bird seed.
Yes.
Okay. So when we look at consumption, most of it still goes into oil. Some of it goes into bird seed. Oil seed is usually the highest value. So that's kind of driving the engine behind this. Well, globally, there has been a pretty quick rebound in palm oil production. Palm oil in Indonesia, Malaysia. Palm oil is actually the largest traded oil seed we have globally. Well, palm oil influences soybean oil. Soybean oil is very closely connected to canola oil and sunflower oil. Okay, so part of this is the vegetable oil market globally. We've had increased supplies. Part of it is we have increased production of sunflower specifically. Now, sunflower oil is a specialty oil, so there's only a few companies that really have a high desire to have sunflower oil as part of their process. Over the years, canola oil has kind of pushed sunflower oil to the side. So we have more canola oil now than we do sunflower oil, although there's a base, a core group of, again, buyers, customers that really do want sunflower oil. So we call that, again, going back to being my, you know, my teacher, it's called inelastic demand. So there's a narrow range of amount of sunflower oil that's really needed. Okay? So if we end up on the short end of that, the buyers say, we don't have a good substitute for it, so the prices go absolutely sky high. They go absolutely nuts because there's a lot of competition. There isn't a lot of good substitutes. Well, if we have more than we need, then the opposite happens. We only need so much, and if you have a bunch of extra, what happens? Prices fall. Down. And it falls very, very quickly because, again, there isn't a lot of other uses other than possibly going into the bird food market. Mm-hmm. So there's a linkage to the global oil seeds, but it is a specialty oil, so it does have its kind of own unique little niche over here that we have to be worried about. And right now we're just on that, on the side of the ledger that has a lot more sunflowers than really most of the buyers want, and so we're trying to figure out where else can we use these up, how low do prices have to go to get somebody else to use more than they have in the past.
What are the top three producing sunflower states?
States or countries?
States, just here in the United States.
States, okay. Yeah. Depends upon the year, but usually North Dakota, South Dakota kind of compete back and forth for number one, number two. Mm-hmm. And then we still have quite a bit of sunflower in Kansas, surprisingly.
Okay.
It's sunflower. Kansas is a sunflower state.
Right. You know?
Yeah. Right.
So those typically end up to be the top three.
Okay.
Do you know if there's any research going on into sunflower seed oil to find other uses to get a higher demand for the sunflowers as a whole?
There has been some work historically in the past to use sunflower oil as like a biofuel, either as a blend biofuel, like where you're blending it, or mm-hmm. now there's some question, can we use sunflower oil for renewable fuels? Well, under the current kind of regulations, in order to get the benefit from that, you have to go through a process to get certified. You have to kind of count the carbon credits. How much mm-hmm. carbon reduction is there by using this particular vegetable oil in this process versus, let's say, crude oil or regular diesel fuel?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the sunflower industry that's a really expensive process, by the way. It takes about 4 or 5 years to go through all of the steps that you need to get certified. The canola industry has done it. They're large mm-hmm. enough and have enough interest in what's happening, especially in Canada. But the sunflower industry said, you know what, because of the cost and the fact that we have our own area, kind of our own footprint, mm-hmm. we think it would be more advantageous for our industry to be that really high-quality food substitute instead of jumping into this fuel market. Let's let the soybeans and the canolas do the fuel, and then we'll backfill into those markets that are left void or left open, in particular from the canola market.
Hmm.
So one of our listeners piped up and mentioned, you know, take commodity traders out of the market, and that would help farmers quite a lot. And I don't know that that's the solution, though.
So I think what they're referring to, there's two pieces.
Okay.
We have what's called the commercial traders, the buyers and sellers that mm-hmm. use the futures market that are also buying and selling cash grain.
Yes.
Farmers, processors, the grain elevators, et cetera. And then we have another kind of two groups called the speculators. We have those that are normally kind of speculating. They're buying and selling every day, trying to make some money on price movements. And we've had those since futures markets began. And we really need those people for what we call liquidity. So every time that I, as a farmer, want to buy or sell a futures contract, somebody else has to be on the other side of that doing the opposite. Okay? Mm-hmm. So the more people that are trading, the easier it is to get into and out of those contract positions. Okay? Fair. Now, I think what your listener is referring to is kind of this newer class of speculators called the investment funds, F-U-N-D-S. Not fun, but funds. Okay? The funds are using the futures markets as part of their investment portfolio. And they manage huge volumes of money. They have huge pools of money. They're using these ag products as a part of their investment portfolio. What drives people crazy is they come in and buy and sell those positions not based on the supply-demand conditions for that particular crop, but based on what the rest of their investment portfolio is doing. So let's give you an example. Let's say that I have part of my investment portfolio in stocks and bonds and mutual funds and some in these commodities like corn and soybeans and wheat. Well, if the stock market's going crazy and there's a potential to make a lot of money in the stock market, what am I going to do? I'm going to pull my money out of the commodities,
right,
and I'm going to put that into the stocks and bonds. Okay, well, when I start pulling back out of the marketplace, what happens to prices in the futures market? They go higher. On the flip side, if the stock market takes a dump and absolutely crashes, what are they going to do? They pull their money back out of the stock market. They put the money in commodities. So if I start selling a bunch of my positions into the futures market, there's more sellers than buyers. What happens to price? And that's what's driving farmers and other commercial traders absolutely nuts. It's very hard to figure out when are these people going to come into and out of the marketplace.
Yep.
And it's adding some more volatility. It's making prices more fluctuate or bounce around more than they have in the past.
This was the point where I had to get out of majoring in ag economics because it was about to get way too high. So then I just went into sales.
I just had a flashback to the movie of Trading Places where they had the orange commodities and they had it ahead of time.
Yes.
That's exactly the concept we're talking about is they really don't know what's going on in the orange juice market. But they know that if I have this information, I can trade it and make a lot of extra money.
Right. Wow. I feel like I just got out of a college class. This is great. I love it.
But it was way more fun than actually
going
to class.
Yeah.
So, Frain, thank you for coming in today. Dr. Frain Olson with NDSU Ag Economics. Do I get the whole title right? Tell me the whole title.
So the whole title.
The whole title.
You got another 20 minutes?
funny enough, we
so
do.
I'm the crop economist and marketing specialist with NDSU Extension. I'm also part of the agribusiness and applied economics department. So I have a couple different hats that I wear.
That's a long name tag.
It is, yeah. It's you should see my business card, man. <It's>
But like I told you guys, I don't even have to introduce Frain because everybody in ag just goes, oh, yeah, okay, we'll be listening. We're ready. So thank you for coming in and spending some time today to help answer listener questions. From time to time, I may ask you more.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I always enjoy it.
I mean, yeah,
appreciate it.
In a political year where folks are asking about potential recession and tariff implications, there's a lot more yet that we could get to. So we may be doing that.
We'll have him on again.
We will.
Yes.
Meanwhile, we have to catch up with just a few things, and then when we come back, we'll touch on headlines, see what's storming in Minnesota, and then also the last weather forecast for the rest of the week. Be right back.
And welcome back to the program. Thanks for rejoining us on this Monday. It is 1:53:51 right now, and temperatures outside, well, it's 80 degrees. We'll hit on that forecast coming up here in just a moment, as well as some storms over in Minnesota. But just got done with a fun conversation with Dr. Frain Olson, NDSU Ag Economics, talking about the wheat and sunflower markets. And, well, like usual, I usually learn something with these conversations. And today I did learn a few things.
It's always good to have that refresher. Because, like I said, I spent a couple quarters majoring in ag economics and then realized, well, I got to get out of here. But the supply, demand, the fact that we are very much a global market makes such a huge difference. And we forget that. We get lost in our own little bubble right here as to what affects us.
You really do.
And I tell you what, if the Canadian railway shutdown would have gone into effect, the impacts we would have had just in simply moving grain from this region out to the Pacific Northwest would have been pretty big.
It would have.
So that all got averted.
It has been averted at this point.
We would have had to load up the old Amtrak.
That's right. All the passenger cars. But I feel like we were always just, you know, one step away from a shutdown of some sort within transportation.
Sure seems like it nowadays.
And for us, we're shipping wheat out. Also, there's a huge canola crop that's got to move around in this region and further north into Canada. And then we also have potash that needs to come back down. Because even though we only use potash fertilizer in the field certain times of the year, 4 to 5 trains per day come down into the States in order to resupply a variety of places across the U.S. So transportation
you don't
think
matters. About that.
You don't.
You sure don't.
And can't do it all by truck. I know Al, Trucker Al, our listener, can do a lot, but I don't know if he can make up entire unit trains.
Yeah, can he pull 7 grain cart or train carts?
We are throwing his electronic book right out the window if we're going to get this done. That's okay. How it's going to have to be.
Hey, Bridget, what can you tell me, you know, since we're kind of touching on markets and whatnot, what a recession do to agriculture?
So there's a number of things, and we didn't quite get to this today with Frayn, but I think it's worth talking about as we continue through the political season right now. First of all, we're going to see the largest decline in farm income from 23 to 24 of about $43 billion. And I said that with a B. Now,
well, it could have been trillion.
It could have been. We're going to look at shifts in consumer spending, where if we go into a recession, people are still going to buy the staples, right? Like,
sure.
Whenever we get a storm coming, we always talk about go get the milk and bread, right?
Milk
make that
butter.
Run. Get that stuff. But that changes some of our high-end foods and some of our specialties, as well as dining out. And that will affect our ag markets. Then you have the impact on all of Main Street and rural communities. That can affect us right here in Fargo. Grocery stores, lumber yards, hardware stores, they will see some changes. Credit and loan challenges, we're going to talk about that next week when Greg Steeman from Starian Banks joins us. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about how that, you know, that there are a number of bigger issues for farmers to try to get credit right now. The commodities that are most vulnerable, cotton, dairy, and then specialized meat and vegetables would be some of those that would be hardest hit. Because the bottom line is with the Farm Bill, Title I of that is very, very important to us right now because we need to try to make sure that we have a safety net when it comes to revenue protection, crop insurance, et cetera. And we are a very small part of the overall Farm Bill.
Sure are.
Very. Well, because SNAP, food and nutrition, school lunch programs, et cetera, make up like 84.7% of the Farm Bill. Keep that number in mind.
Wow. Why don't they got their own bill?
Because both they need each other.
Yeah.
In order to get both of those things passed, you want them together. Because if you separate them out, it becomes very messy for people to understand the difference between the two, and we would not get as far with it. Okay. To be honest, the only area of the U.S. budget that we really have Congress voting on is defense spending. But today, we spend more money on interest on our debt than we do on our defense budget. Do the math. Mm-hmm. It's huge.
That's a big number.
It's very big.
It's a sad number.
I know. And, you know, Tom Vilsack is going to be joining us. He's a U.S. Secretary of Ag. He'll be joining us at Farm Progress this week. So I'll be curious to hear if he has any news. I don't feel very likely that he's going to get the Farm Bill passed, like, tomorrow. But maybe he'll share something further.
Yeah, there's always 2025.
Okay. So watch out for the storms as you head east, right? Is that what I heard?
Yeah, there's one over your bank right now. Dumping a lot of rain. Ottertail County right now for another 16 minutes. Severe thunderstorm warning. Potential for ping pong ball sized hail. Wouldn't it be fun to catch one of those? No? All right. Well, I guess we're already here. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Have a nice day.